He is Justin Davis, user experience designer and titanium master. Because that's really the best type. I was going to say mercenary.
We're lacking.
Mercenary works too.
Mercenary works. We're lacking.
We'll go with that. Titanium mercenary.
Lacking for alliteration today. And he is Aubrey Goodman, the web services and all manner of developer guru and the baron of badassery. And this is a little show we call Distilled. Welcome.
I would think Duke of Disappointment this week.
Duke of Disappointment.
Most wow. valuable peon.
Most valuable peon. MVP. MVP on. Yeah. That's great. I hope that there's somebody in the world
bag.
Whose name is MVP on. Could you imagine? Like first name Marshall, middle name Victor, last name peon. MVP on. Yeah. Yes, that'd be great.
Right. I'm a professional punching bag. no, it's been a rather dramatic week, at least in my life, the details of which will not be shared for the benefit of my legal funding.
To count. Yeah, that's right.
We're going to plug along here. We're doing an early episode this week. Normally, we record on Thursdays. Today's Wednesday. Although, we're still going to publish on Friday, so it sort of doesn't matter to you. But, you know.
Feel the humpiness.
Yeah.
In it. anyway.
Again, jokes withheld.
Yeah, exactly.
Jokes withheld to protect our, again, legal liability.
Yeah, quite clearly. I was gonna
it's going to be that kind of episode.
I think I was going to intro you as like something with having to do with legal something.
Yeah.
But I couldn't come up with an L except for loser, and I didn't feel like that quite had the right connotation.
Yeah. So far everyone's losing, and that's really the saddest part. And again, that's really as far in as we're going to go. Sadly, all the folks out there who aren't privy to the standard day-to-day conversations of our lives are left in the cold in a way. But I guess there will eventually be an announcement of some kind. But needless to say, it's been a rather dramatic couple of days
here. No, that's
here.
For sure. That's
so,
for sure. So yeah,
we may have a topic. We may eventually get around to the
we
point.
Might eventually, get around I don't know. To it. Yeah, I have lots of little miscellaneous things on my mind. I've been plugging away at I've had my head in the code for so long now that it's all I think about.
Do you wake up with like?
I did in
code
the middle of the
solutions.
Night. Like, yeah, in the middle of the night. Like, I think about, like, I dream about, like, fucking ways to build things. It's really, really sick.
I don't think that's sick. I believe that there's a term for that. It's called workaholism.
Yes. I mean, it caused me last night to wake up at, like, 3:30 in the morning with a splitting headache.
Ooh, that
thinking
isn't
about
good.
The damn work so much. It was just horrible. So that's not good.
Yeah.
maybe I shouldn't, work from 9 a.m. to 12:30 p.m.
And he doesn't mean... No, you mean a.m., actually.
A.m.
Because 9 a.m. to 12:30 p.m.
That's about
a pretty
right.
short day.
Yeah, right. And 12:30 a.m.
Yeah, I've been working this similar schedule, like 8 a.m. to like 2 a.m.
Yeah, terrible.
It's maybe a break for...
A couple hours, maybe.
Like taking the darts out of my back.
That's the one. Yeah, it's hard to get a good grip on those knife handles.
When your boss like puts a target on your back and says, "Run! I'm throwing stuff at you. Try to dodge because you might get an arrow in the neck."
Yeah,
if I miss
fun.
The target,
that's fun.
Yeah, no, it's not fun.
No,
and it's the kind of thing that keeps you up at night.
Yeah, no doubt.
Or makes you never sleep to begin with, and. No one likes that. No one likes being treated like a target or...
By the way, did we start the recording?
We did, yeah.
Okay, good. I was just... I don't know why. I realized I never did it. No,
I started it when it was... I was just like, all right, well, I guess we'll start this now and I'll cut it.
Perfect.
Head and tail and we'll figure it out.
Very good. Oh, man. Wow.
Man.
This was the week that I was convinced to use Vim as my text editor.
Mm.
That's been interesting. I actually like it a lot. Despite the fact that I'm using the mouse with it.
Wait, what? No.
Yeah, I know.
It does not compute.
No, I'm trying to wean myself off of it.
VI and mouse are like...
No, I know. But
is that even a thing? Can you even do that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Set so mouse equals A.
Okay.
And so...
So that's in
I
the
read a blog post from Yehuda Katz where someone told Yehuda that he needed to start using Vim because he was using like Sublime Text and TextMate or whatever, right? And so they were like, no, man, you need to be using Vim. And he was like, and so he wrote this blog post about like why everyone who told me I should use Vim was wrong. And which is, again, one of these great link bait type of titles, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, of course, I was like, oh, yeah. And basically, he goes through it and he talks about like
link
how
bait.
Now all he all he does is
click
use...
me. You want to click me because I'm incendiary.
Man, it totally worked.
Yeah.
And like all he does is use Vim now. But he talked about like the things that people like the big fallacy is people told him you got to just go whole hog, cut everything, do it all the Vim way, just cold turkey.
Like, stop
and he
using
was like,
Command-T.
No. Yeah. Right. And so he was like, no, what you have to do, he's like, he used the mouse for a long time and like weaned himself off of it and like just got used to the Vim way because he said, and he made a good point. He said, look, it, as great as it is to think that I could sit here and just learn Vim, I have work to do.
Yeah.
And if I have to spend time learning the text editor and it slows me down, I'm not going
to
use it.
Right. I have to remember that I use H, J, K, and L instead of up, down, left, and right.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I still use up, down, left, and right.
Yeah, you can do
well.
Both, incidentally.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
If you're a ninja, then you disable the arrow keys.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not quite there yet. But I do like it. It's cool. It's cool.
Again, though, I love this inappropriate metaphor thing where people talk about ninjas. Like, oh, I need a... Like, the rock star thing makes total sense to me in a way, because that's like everybody recognizes your authority. But the ninja thing is like, so you're going to hire someone who never shows up and is actively like trying
stealthy,
like trying not to be seen, trying not to report. They don't want to tell you anything about what's going on, and they're just going to knife you in your sleep.
Perfect.
Right. This sounds like a beautiful hiring strategy. No, I know what you mean. It's you use
fair,
it.
you have a fair argument here.
So the ninja doesn't tell you, like doesn't share his Vim conf with you. What's you have to find it with an Easter egg that he also programmed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, that's been an interesting experience.
I mean, I love VI. I use it for stream editing when I'm in a terminal and I only have to do a quick change or, you know, so there are things that VI doesn't do very well that, or at least that if it does, I don't know how to do them.
Yeah.
That TextMate does extremely well. Like my personal favorite on that one, I think that there might be a way to do this in TextMate, but Sublime is the one that reigns king on this one, which is you can select a string and then you hit like some key command to select the next one, the next instance of that string.
Yeah.
And then you can just hit that key command as many times as like number of strings you want to do. There's like a skip over this one to go to the next one. Don't select it. And then you edit and it edits all instances that are selected. So it doesn't have to be a column tabular thing. Like TextMate's great for that. If you have like 5 or 10 rows of text, you have to change like variable assignment dot whatever, variable dot whatever, variable dot whatever. And you change the variable name, then you know it's... Instead of doing a find and replace, you know, sometimes it's better to just do the column select where you're typing in a bunch of different columns. But apparently, I think there probably is a way to do that in Vim, but I just don't know what
it is.
I think
so. I think I've heard that there is, but it's probably some very obscure.
They're always obscure.
Yeah.
And the letters don't match the words you think they are.
No, not at all. Not like instead of copy C, it's yank.
Why? And my favorite is,
is very funny.
Those things are also, you can do like shift Y is a different thing than Y.
Oh, yeah.
And like you do a prepend. So if you want to copy 3 lines, starting with the current line and paste all of them before the current line, or like where the current line is, you do 3YY.
Right.
Then.
Yeah.
Like lowercase p, to paste it.
Yeah,
it's really, like okay.
Yeah, it's so a lot of memorization.
6YS/, whatever. Enter and then like cool. Yeah, that'll do all the things you want.
Yeah, right.
But you can't like try. I just like this is a classic programmer humor thing where people who are coders will sometimes talk to each other on instant messaging through like code.
Yeah.
Like, Aubrey dot assert happy false.
yeah.
Aubrey.job.search.
Perfect. Yeah, no doubt. That's
no, I should probably cut that.
Yeah.
This is as far as I can talk about it. I'm sorry.
So I wonder if the buffer... This has got to be a joke that's already been made. But the buffer that keeps track of all the things you're copying is called the Yank Bank. I would really hope.
That it is. Paste buffer. Fuck a paste buffer. That thing's called a Yank Bank.
A Yank Bank. Oh, man. That's awesome. Yeah, so anyway.
You heard it here first, folks.
So that's,
maybe I'll call this episode
the Yank Bank. Oh, God. It'll be the best trafficked episode yet.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Except for that, there was that one funny, rather amusing, somewhat ironic happenstance on the way that iTunes renders the Anatomy of a Cocktail Party episode.
Oh, which the truncation?
Yeah, they truncate, of course. So, like, they only show the first 20 letters or something.
Oh, man.
So the title shows up as Anatomy of a Cock. We're like,
good. We'll put the
tail party.
Right,
okay.
That will be good. That's awesome. And by the way, tail party is also sounds like a really great thing.
Oh, man. Totally didn't even think of that. Now I'm really excited about it. So we have two episodes, Anatomy of a Cock, and then the next one is called Tail Party.
And then Yank Bank. Yeah. Alrighty.
Man, we're really straight into the gutter on this thing.
Man, that's great.
And amazingly, again, there is no bourbon this time.
We're in a little bit...
We're rushing, I think, is key here.
Yeah, that's probably it. This is bizarre. Two episodes without anything to drink, aside from your coffee that you have sitting there.
Yeah, which is not an Irish coffee, despite my best efforts.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. We're going to rectify that situation.
It's one of those, like, single-tier
Christmas
moments.
Yeah. Oh, sad.
So sad.
So, yeah. Oh, man. Gonna drink a lot over Christmas. Anyway,
Is that like a family...
A promise?
Is this like a status quo kind of thing? Like,
oh, yeah.
You feel like you gotta be at least as drunk as your sister?
Yeah, pretty much. It's like a little bit of, like...
And that's like a one-up party that never goes poor or never goes well.
No, never.
It goes definitely different than
definitely
you expect.
Poorly, yeah.
If you remember any of it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Amnesia on your side.
That never was on my side. The very few times when I have lost my memory from excessive drinking, it's not gone well for me.
Yeah.
The stories that I hear after the fact are like, I did what now? That doesn't sound like something I would do.
That's funny.
But no, they're trusted sources.
Yeah.
And this is why I don't do that anymore. So
a few other learnings I had this week that you might find interesting, a few miscellaneous things. did I update you about my sitemap being crawled by Google now? So, like, oh, it's a thing of beauty.
So the they finally figured out the cached domain thing. Did you just paste in the IP like I suggested?
No, it wouldn't work because when you set up Google
Maps... ask for a host? They're like, you can't give us
assumes
that.
A host, right? You can't edit the host.
All
right.
Well, that screws that idea.
So, but it eventually did just randomly switch over.
So maybe it was like a 30-day cache.
Maybe, or 14 or something, which seems incredibly long for DNS cache.
Very long.
But whatever.
Especially, like, it should be respecting the TTL on that.
Yeah, you would think so.
I mean, that's why there is a time to live. Like, it specifies how long, like maximum, how long you should catch it.
You know what's funny about the time to live? I used to think it was time to live, and that which funny enough would be actually the same thing, kind of,
sort of, in a way.
If you updated it at the anyway,
yeah, from a certain point of view.
Yeah, so I have this like script that's building all the links to every page dynamically every night at 2 o'clock in the morning, and then pointing the bot at prerender.io to like render out all the pages and send them to the bot.
Nice,
and it's working beautifully. I think I have now almost 1,100 pages indexed.
So how's that affecting your behavior, like your user
not
behavior?
Not yet.
Has it affected your page rank at all?
Here's what's bizarre. Is
or
I can't actually figure out
caching your page rank too.
Yeah, right.
Should exist.
Yeah, probably so. I haven't been able to see it in the search result yet. I've done some cursory searches. There's a very odd thing. It's the Google Webmasters tool is actually a very strange and eerie place. And if I go into the crawl thing where it says, like, here are the crawl stats. Here's how many links we've crawled. Here how many I've been submitted to the index.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, almost 1,100 pages. Then if I go to the index stats, it says pages indexed, 7. So I'm not sure if submitting to the index and indexing are two different things, and they may be. But I haven't investigated this, so it may be that they're still not quite showing up yet. But either way, it's on its way, and the
but
the whole architecture
all of you, all of your responsibilities are done.
You've done
everything you're supposed to do.
And I believe so.
They should now be indexing your your static your dynamic content as if it were static.
Yeah, exactly.
Or at least through an RSS-ish, kind of a thing.
Yep, exactly.
And you're using, like, standard XML, all this stuff that they wanted.
Yep.
Are you assigning the, like, all the properties, like, changed at?
Yeah, changed
at the actual time when,
like,
the data
like
changed.
Interval, all that kind of thing.
They'll get really upset with you and blacklist you if you fake those dates. If you always say, like, now, time.now. Or something like that.
Yeah, no, it's not good.
Don't like you for that.
I actually don't think I submit an updated at. I think I just submit a change frequency.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if the change frequency is like the highest frequency they have for all the data.
Yeah.
And I don't think most of the data that you have in your system doesn't even update at all. Or that doesn't change at all, does it?
Like,
do people change their...
Yeah, like once they, like, save a place, would it change?
Frequency
very,
of,
very low. Probably, and so I think...
Well, the drawer itself would change.
The drawer itself would change,
the drawer's
but the place
updated,
detail...
like frequency would not. The place so you'd have a lot of things that are new, fresh content that's being produced and, you know, disseminated, but... and that's valuable.
Yeah.
And Google does add value, or it does weight that fairly highly.
Yeah, oh, I do have it all set to daily.
But if it's... yeah.
Should probably change that.
I wondered, though. So you never know. Like, in these situations, like, that sort of thing can easily be a thing you set when you're coding it, and then you run it, and you submit it, and you're like, yay, everything right works, and you forgot to go back and check for all your to-do tags that you put in your code, which hopefully you do that.
Yeah.
That's a really good practice. Maybe we'll talk about that for a minute. So while you're building a product, a lot of times you don't know what you're doing. And that's actually a completely acceptable thing.
Yep.
In fact, that's almost the preferred strategy for most things. Because, frankly, if you're building something that you've built before, why didn't you just use the last thing?
Yeah, right.
Reuse it. Don't rebuild it. That makes no sense.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you are reusing, then you don't have to build. You just reconfigure. And if you are not reusing and you have to rebuild something, put to-do tags in there that say, like, to remind yourself... like, to do, capital T, capital O, capital D, capital O, colon. And then, like, make a standard says, like, policy. Anytime I come to something where I make some fudge decision, and I just, because I have to move forward, I don't have the data to, you know, implement this feature right now, or I will eventually have it, or, you know, however that works, or, like, you don't know what the design is going to be yet, but you're working on experimental code, and you build something, put something in there that says, to do, take this out, or to do, implement feature description. That way, when you go back, when you're, quote, done, and you're like, what's my last, you know, release candidate review process? Oh, I have to go back and look for all the to-dos. I have to look for all the debug prints that shouldn't be in there.
Yep.
I have to disable that. If you're using console log instead of, like, Thai API debug.
Right.
Which I notice you do. You use console log everywhere.
Console log everywhere.
Right. You need to upgrade. Just do a massive find and replace for console.log.
Yeah.
And just replace it with Thai API info or debug. Preferably debug.
Yeah.
Because
that's
that
a habit
way,
I carried over from the web.
Yeah. Those are bad habits. So if you can do, look for the to-dos, because then at least you can either, like, take out the ones that are, like, obviously the decision has already, like, has been made irrelevant or something like that, but just call through your code and say, here's where that thing is.
Yep.
And I have started, instead of just going, you know, like, //fuck it // I have no idea what I'm da-da-da-da-da and just, like, whatever the mood I'm in at the moment, which is usually just annoyed, then, you know, actually going and saying, like, look, I have to put the word to do here, because if that way I can search and replace for it later.
I did this last night. I was working on a user registration on the drawer site, and I had built it and it wasn't working. And I realized it was because I was using HTTPS on my local install, and my local install does not have an SSL cert, so it just didn't work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I basically made it, I originally made it, this is actually a question for you as well. I'd originally made it just HTTP. And then I put a to-do next to it that was like, to-do, set this back to HTTPS before pushing live, because otherwise I'm pushing a password in plain text across a wire, right?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. I remember doing some review on your code and seeing, because I was trying to see how you were doing, I think it was image upload, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I was doing photo
on
uploads.
The drawer API?
And looking at the drawer API and looking at it and saying, like, oh. Or no, it was in the drawer Titanium app.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm looking at, because I was trying to figure out how to do image uploads in Titanium to a paperclip-based Rails object. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So you do this, you do that, you do this. Great. That's awesome. So I'll do that. But when I was doing it, I'm looking in your code to see where you were doing the upload part.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, HTTP. Justin, for shame. There's like it's a base URL somewhere in there. This is like, oh, cool. So you're just giving away your API token.
Yeah, awesome.
Anyone who's in between you and wherever else.
Yeah, it's whatever you want to do.
So,
So
you're telling me basically what I need to do is set up my promiscuous sniffer to code anything that says, like, you know, HerokuApp.com. Oh, let's filter on that and make sure I just go ahead and...
Yeah, exactly. So what I want to do... So if I don't...
As if I don't already have your API token from being plain text in the code.
For real.
Which is also
is a bad idea.
No, put that in your config files and don't check them in.
Yeah.
For shame, Justin. For shame.
There's a lot of really bad stuff that I have to go clean up.
Well, yeah, we reviewed my code. It's your turn next time.
Oh, God. That would take years. Are you kidding me? It would just be like, it'd be better if you just deleted it all and just started over.
No, you actually do have some really good code.
Well, thank you.
I don't say that lightly either.
But so I was thinking last night, I was like, God, if I push this live and I don't remember to search for this to do, that's a bad thing. Now, it's not as bad on the web as it is Titanium, because the bad thing about Titanium is once you ship an app, there's no changing it. I mean, you can issue an update, but if the users don't update it, that vulnerability is there forever.
Well, that is true, except for people who have their auto updates turned on for iOS 7.
Right. Yes.
And there are, I think it's now like less than 5% of all the iOS devices on the marketplace don't have iOS 7.
That's good. That's good.
Now, I don't know about the auto update, because that is actually a personal feature, like a setting you can change as a user, but it defaults to on.
Okay.
So if they don't, I think it's like 90% of people, 85 to 90% of people don't change the settings that are defaults on anything.
Good.
Which is why Linksys routers have like always the admin password as admin.
Right.
Yeah.
So great. So great.
So.
But when I wonder if you could create a workflow. This would be a fairly complicated workflow to solve this problem, but maybe it wouldn't. Like, let's say that you work. I know I was talking to the Weavy guys today, and they use Gitflow. I've never used Gitflow.
Mm-hmm.
But evidently, you're supposed to, like, for every feature, create a branch and then merge that back into develop.
And if you do it the way that Gitflow wants you to do it, I think it's like that you name the branch as like try dash whatever the feature name is. That's how Dan does it. Dan Lin, one of my
developers. I've seen that before.
You know, he loved that pattern. He's like, look, I'm going to have like a dev Dan Lin branch, and you're going to have a dev Aubrey branch, and we'll have a dev whatever branch for all the other devs. And that's like your personal development window. And what we normally do is we have a staging branch that is essentially a like iteration release candidate. So anytime we do branching, we do some kind of contribution, it goes into a branch. I normally review that branch, whether it's, you know, a specific, you know, try feature branch or a you know, just a this week's iteration branch, whatever that is. Usually we'll do active branches where everything gets merged into. But I really like the idea of having a branch for every little thing you do. So you start start something, you create a branch, you do something, whatever it is. You know, you write your tests if you're doing TDD. You know, make your code till the tests pass. Commit everything into that branch with nice messages on everything, and not just, you know, lol, big commit is big.
Right.
I did have one last week that I was embarrassed by, but I'm going to share it because it's relevant. The the commit log I left was hasty, lazy commit is hast and lazy. I misspelled hasty the second time. It was so hasty that I misspelled the word hasty.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So it's like hasty commit. Hasty lazy commit is hasty and lazy. Except I misspelled it. And it was
perfect.
Like 80 files or something changed. It was unreasonable. And the only reason was because, you know, it's a classic we're doing this wrong kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, we're going to... Oh, we have a demo right now? Oh, wait, right now? Oh, shit, right now. You mean right now? Oh, not in 5 minutes, but right now. Wait, why don't I... shouldn't we be preparing for these things and having some more policy? Fuck that. No. I don't care about policy. I got to have a demo. Got to have demo. So I'm like, okay, whatever. You're gonna, I'll just commit whatever we have so I have at least some point of tagging. Like,
right.
I'll tag this ugly piece of snot and... push it to your tablet, and now you've got a demo. But now I'm going to keep working, and oh, all that shit that was broken while I was in the middle of it.
Yep.
That all gets... That right. doesn't happen when you do Gitflow.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they get whatever's in the master, and, like,
right.
you don't share what's not ready.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You don't merge it into staging. You don't merge it into master until it's ready.
Yeah,
and that's exactly. the key.
And that's... I'd like to use Gitflow and put, like, a commit hook... that scans to look for console logs and to-dos and all that and won't allow the commit until you take care of them.
So that's like a CI, continuous integration issue.
Yeah.
And for those who are unfamiliar with Gitflow, it isn't like a piece of software or some program, some policy, some brand that someone created. It's really just a best practice for how to use Git to manage your process and how you push release candidates out.
Pretty cool. I'm going to have to get on that as well.
Yeah, Craig Clayton did a Gitflow meetup last year for the iSuncoast group.
I really wanted to be there.
And it was somewhat informative. I mean, he kind of... I love the guy. And he's really an excellent educator. But I think he, in that very specific instance, he was kind of spastic because he's like, oh, we're going to do Core Data Stack and Gitflow, which is like, they're not really similar. Mm. They're not really similar at all. So it was like, oh, like 30 minutes for this, 30 minutes for this, totally unrelated thing.
Great.
Which is a little weird. It kind of splits the focus for the meetup, but the Gitflow part was really great. And the Core Data Stack was really just like, hey, here's this tool that I use. It's pretty cool, but actually I want to talk about this other stuff. So, but yeah, I mean, it's a really valuable process. Yep. And, you know, we talk a lot about process. We talked about process today with Michelle Royal and how process is so unbelievably vital to your business. And
it's so important.
If you don't
so important.
Have a set policy and practice and procedure for what happens, you know, to manage these things, then it doesn't get managed.
Yeah, that's right.
It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It means it might happen in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Or it might, you know, you just whatever it is, it's not necessarily what you want.
Right,
you
yeah.
just get
yeah.
more transparency when you yeah. have more process. And
sitting down to hammer those processes out and to the extent you have to document those and formalize them and abide by them just makes everything go so much smoother as opposed to just sort of cowboying your way through it, you know?
Yeah. Cowboying is fine to a point. And there is much value in Cowboy when you have a very small team and you're really just bootstrapping something out the door and you got to rush to get it out so that you can get as fast to that, you know, failed assertion or validated assertion as you can, like we talked about last week. Yeah. You know, and it's just, it's so much better to have, you know, to get to the, okay, well, how did we fail this week?
Yeah,
you know, that's a really important question to ask.
Yeah,
if you don't have a policy and practice, then A, you don't know what you did or didn't do that works or didn't work or doesn't work, and you don't necessarily know who's doing what. And you know, if you have a big bunch of like a bucket of bugs, and people are like, okay, cool, reach in, pick one out, and fix it. That's great if everyone is in a code pen, you know, like a bullpen kind of deal, and everyone's doing that.
Right.
For like 4 hours, which is always what I try to do for mini tasks. So I tend to prefer to organize things into high-level tasks and then trust my people to get it done or ask for help. High-level tasks are nice for me. But in some cases, then, you know, there'll be a defect that's like the padding on this button is 10 pixels too large. It needs to be smaller. Or, you know, this font is two points too small or too large or whatever it is. And those little things, you can't estimate them time because it's like 1 minute, five minutes. So what we end up usually doing is allocating a half a day. So we'll do like Wednesday morning, 9 to 12 or 8 to 12 or 10 to 12 or whatever it is when you want to come in. You know, come in, allocate, like mark that you're going to work on this on bug resolution, and then just, you know, burn through as much as you can, as efficiently as you can. And then, you know, then get back to, you know, individual task tracking or something like that.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I mean, I talk about all this stuff a lot, you know, on and off air, and it ends up being that we want to do these things, but sometimes if we're really in a, you know, like a high pressure cowboy scenario where it's like, I don't fucking care what it looks like. It has to be out the door right now. And it has to be perfect. And oh, God. And you're like, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and get the thing that said you had to get it out the door. That's higher priority than making it perfect. So we'll get to perfect maybe eventually. But, you know, at least let us get something out the door, you know, in that kind of scenario where it's, you know, one or two maybe developers, it's really hard to track tasks. It's like, how long is this going to take? Like, I don't know, let me just do it.
And
then look how long it took.
And you can over-organize. I mean, you can prescribe the stuff. So it's it's important to be able to understand the right amount of process and structure without eating up all of your available overhead managing yourself.
Yeah, and that's a slippery slope even. I mean, not a slippery slope. That's not what I meant to say. It's a tricky game to play a balance with that. Even when you have a team of one and you're starting to hire people, sometimes people will say, oh, well, you know, every new person you hire actually adds the time, not takes away from the total time it's going to take to build a product.
The mythical man hour.
Right.
Yep.
And, you know, sometimes it depends on who you hire and how their experience is and how you treat them. And if you want to give them latitude or you want to, you know, look over their shoulder and basically type through their ears, out through your mouth, through their ears, through their fingers into the keyboard, you know, there are situations where you'd want to do all these things, but it really is a matter of effective, you know, measured application of these things. And, you know, being a micromanager when you have to be. I hate to say that out loud, but I mean, but I frankly want to never hire people who need that. But
I mean, but there are times, like, especially when you're bringing somebody new on, you know, like, for instance, I just started actually using, I started using Git issues to track all my features. Right. And
that's
so
a good idea.
Every feature I want, I create an issue for it. And then in the commit, because I just learned that you can close an issue with a commit.
I didn't know you could do that.
Like, just in the commit, if you type closes number, like the number of the thing, it'll close
it. Uses
and
text.
It'll append the commit message to the issue.
To the comment?
Yeah.
Oh, that is handy.
It's so cool.
See, and
so
this is why I love GitHub.
It's so great. It's so great. And so I just spent a day basically, like, running through. I created a milestone for the Jora web app launch. I created a bunch of issues for each feature. And then now as I work through it, I make a feature, close the issue on as I commit, blah, 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 and go through it. The important thing about this is that when the time comes that I have to bring people on board to help out with the development tasks, it makes it that much easier because I can say to that person, okay, we use GitHub. Here's the repository. I just added you to the repo. Here are the issues for this milestone. You're going to work on issues number, 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 right? And just close them with the commit like this when you do it.
I've ordered them in priority. Please do the higher priority ones first.
Exactly.
Like, they're tagged in color or whatever. This is exactly what we did for iCoast.
Yeah.
Sophia and I were building really very, 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 very quickly and very agilely. And so I would make some feature changes and she would go into GitHub issues and just write a bunch of stuff down. And she's like, I'm sorry for all the commit issues. And I'm like, what are you sorry for? This is great.
It's awesome.
It's so hard for me to get people to use GitHub who are not technical.
Right.
I mean, product owners, to get product owners to use GitHub or any feature, any tool at all, and clearly explain what their features are is very hard. And with her, it was very easy. And so she was wonderful to work with in that regard. She was wonderful to work with in all regards. But I'm sort of biased on that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, it's great to be able to use features like that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I didn't know that the commit thing. I wonder because GitHub does also uses CI webhooks. So I wonder if you could use like a commit log or something in the commit that would tell it like closes that. And this is also required for a CI build. So if this issue isn't, like, use milestones for CI.
Oh.
So if all the issues on this milestone have been met and are checked off, then I will deploy. But if they're not, like, until they are, I won't deploy.
I don't know.
I mean, you're talking about the Titanium side though, right? Not the web side.
No.
You are talking about.
Yeah.
But interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
That was.
Yeah.
sort of counter to what I was thinking, but okay.
Yeah, well, I've not been working on titanium for like 4 weeks, so
yeah.
I'm all web right now.
Okay. But I mean, as far as like future things that need a, you know, in the webs, I mean the mobile side.
Yeah.
You're working on a titanium thing, and you know you have an issue. You would do the same thing there.
Yeah.
Except you don't really have a deploy CI with that. So,
right. No.
Because that involves an app store.
Right.
Upload. Yeah. That's definitely human in the loop.
And involves kind of a faux compile type of deal through the studio and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. Right. It's not faux compile. It is.
I guess it is compiled.
Native compile. Yeah. Generates a bunch of stuff from your Alloy.js right. and all that.
Yeah.
yeah. So you know, I think.
Yeah.
There's a great value here.
It's
cool.
I mean,
I love all that. I didn't know you could do that. So that's, yeah, I'm gonna start using that.
I even went and you can use synonyms. So you can do fixes number, closes number, close number,
closed
fix number, closed
like past tense.
Yeah. So they've mapped all those synonyms.
Yeah.
so last night I set up a Twitter account called Drawer Commits.
Drawer Commits. I saw that.
Yeah.
Because you followed me.
Yeah, I know. It makes you follow like, five people. So I was like, who would want to read my commit logs? and so, yeah. So,
I feel flattered. I was like user number. I was followed number two.
I know, right?
That's great.
I know.
Were you followed number one?
I followed myself, and then I followed you.
Nice.
Yeah.
I feel very proud.
So I was trying.
I'm like a godfather.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to use if this then
but
that.
Not that godfather. I don't know if your code is good enough. This commit is we're going to need you to commit on a more frequent basis. I'd hate for anything to happen to your repository.
That's awesome. The code godfather. The code father.
The code father. Oh, my God.
Yes.
We have to parody this.
Yes.
We can just talk to Darren.
That is awesome.
Do some video.
Oh,
this would be great.
God, that'd be so great. So I was going to use if this then that to hook up a like commit hook to where every time I committed, it would just post.
Mm-hmm.
The unfortunate part about that is that only works with public repos. Mm-hmm. You can't do those private right. repo. I'm not really crazy yeah. about keeping the drawer web thing public.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. I share that.
So I think I'm just going to build a... what you can do is you can do post commit hooks on GitHub. So after you commit, it'll call an endpoint that you give it. And so I'm just going to put a script on my server that it calls, so every time it'll commit. And what's great about that is I can do that from multiple repos. So I can do that for the drawer, all the drawer mobile repos, the API repo, and the web repo. I can point them all at the same endpoint on the post commit hook and then have it post all the commits in that thing. It was just, did you see the description of it? It was basically commits from the drawer team, proof that we are actually working to make it better. I promise.
Only like right on the edge of snarky.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I promise. I know there's a lot broken. I'm working on it. I'm only one guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So funny.
Yeah, I remember when we were working on, you know, just to take a sidebar for a second on... influencing your ratings on the App Store because there's the bullhorns effect where people love you or hate you, and it's either a thumbs up or thumbs down, one star, five star, not really anywhere in between.
Right.
You can influence that by...
showing that you're trying.
Right. The way you do it is what Charles Armstrong did for Tourist when we first launched years ago was... He had some great consideration for user experience on this, at least customer experience, which was the very first three lines, like the top three lines of the app description, the ones that show up before the click to read more thing.
Yeah.
Those three had nothing to do with product at all. It was like, we're working really hard to make this product as good as we can. And then like three enters.
Oh.
And then the description.
Wow. That's cool.
So like basically... you know, we're really trying to make this an awesome app, and you know, we're really sorry if you don't like it, but please, you know, here's a way you can feedback and help us help you.
That's a great idea.
And like, fuck the description. It was like eight lines down when it started.
That's awesome.
So you have to click read more even to learn anything about the app.
Wow.
The very first thing you see is, we love you guys and we want to make the best product we can, so please help us. And also, you know, we're just human. If we make a mistake, we're sorry about it, but
that's...
you know, like, it takes a village, basically, and that kind of direct, like, aggressive vulnerability attitude is something I advocate a lot, and it's something that seems to be really effective because Tourist, which is now called Sphere, spelled as it sounds, is now, I think, 4.5 stars on the App Store.
That's
like
awesome.
Over a million downloads. God. I think we probably have 1.2 now, 1.3. So, you know, it's a lot. And
that's so cool.
You know, to have millions of downloads, I mean, over a million downloads and, you know, over 4 stars is a really big achievement. And, and, you know, I'm super proud of everything that they've done since we went our separate ways, as it were.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are things you can do to mitigate that. I think what you're doing with Drawer, with the Drawer Commits Twitter feed, is great because it does that. I mean, everything you can do to reach out and you know, develop any kind of compassion and transparency. Yeah, that's so important, especially for consumer. For business, I don't know that it matters as much because, frankly, the business just, like, they're more interested in the bottom line and, like, how much it costs to use your app, how much they get, how much they make from using your app, and, you know, that kind of thing.
But on the consumer side.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Sweet. Making sure people are feeling comfortable. Yeah. This is something that Ryan Holmes and I talked about late last week. You know, just like making people feel comfortable. He's like, I go out of my way to make everyone feel as comfortable as possible. If they're around me and I don't, like, I feel like if I get even a hint that they are uncomfortable, I'm going to start, you know, trying to ask them questions like what makes them feel more comfortable and all that. And I thought, man, I could really learn something from that because I've just never, ever, ever cared.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you're not comfortable, I leave it up to you to take action to make a change on that.
Yeah.
And it's sort of funny because, like, you know, my whole family's from the South. So you would think that I would be more attuned to that.
Yeah, I have a similar habit to Ryan.
But I am also 16 out of 32 on the autism spectrum. So,
so there's that.
I'm literally like 1 point shy of an Asperger's diagnosis.
Oh, perfect. That's
But I have also been really learning a lot about empathy and how to apply that to you know, better human interactions.
I tend to have the same type of affliction, in that I tend to be probably more empathetic in social situations than is good for me at times. Hmm. If I notice somebody's, you know, remember we talked about the cocktails, the dynamic of a cock, or the anatomy of a cock, rather, tail conversation, party.
Tail party.
Tail party. And one thing that one role that we talked about was what did we call that? Like the custodian or some, the person who was taking control of the conversation, who was the person who was involved with making sure the conversation was going well, monitoring the flow, introducing new topics, involving
people. I believe that is the instigator.
The instigator might be the instigator,
Yeah. Interlocutor is also sort of that.
Yeah.
But an interlocutor, I think we have agreed that the interlocutor is actually a subset of the instigator role.
Yeah.
The instigator's job is to make sure that people are engaged. Like, I feel like the conversation is stagnating, so I'm going to rope in somebody and see if they can inject something interesting.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Revitalize the conversation.
Yeah. So I have a very similar sensibility to myself in that if I'm in a group of people and like there are some people who aren't talking, I feel responsible for making sure that that person feels equally engaged in the conversation. And it's actually, I guess it's a good thing to a point, but at the same time, it always makes me uncomfortable in those situations because I feel this weight of responsibility that that is not really mine.
Right, it isn't.
You know? But I, like, adopt that responsibility, which is very strange.
It's not strange. I mean, it's hard to explain, but it's very, very common.
Yeah.
It's just basic social reciprocity.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Wow, reciprocity is a really, really explosive word, isn't it?
Reciprocity. It's sibilance and...
It has everything.
Yeah. Pops. Oh, man.
What can I give back, though? Ah, you see what I did there?
Oh, there we go. There we go, folks. And curtains.
Curtains. It's curtains for you.
Yeah. So funny. It's interesting as technologists, we're very lucky in what we do as technologists and product builders is that we spend so much time if we're good at what we do, thinking about social behavior, right? And using social behavior to create interesting experiences. It's something that I think the best in our field do well is understand social theory and have an empathetic understanding of how people work. It's sort of a random thought, but
yeah, it's funny. Anyway. Some people have accused me of being a terrible people person sometimes, and that's probably fair for the most part. mostly because, you know, I'm thinking of big picture stuff. I'm thinking of how is it, like, we need to make an interface that will work for not just you, not just, you know, the product owner, but the aggregate, the majority, the 80%, anyone who wants to use this system, who, you know, whose behavior we can't predict or presuppose even. So they say, you're not doing a very good job of interacting with me right now. And I'm like, okay, my job is to make sure that people can interact with this information.
Right.
And so I'm sorry that I'm failing to interact with you in a way that you expect, but, you know, so it's sort of an ironic thing, I think.
Yeah.
Because I face this a lot where, you know, like, I'll have this conversation with anytime a client relationship goes south, and like when it turns out that, you know, we all have different expectations, or, you know, it suddenly becomes clear that all the things we thought we agreed on weren't actually clear at all, and now we've gone down this path and blah, 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 blah. All the drama that comes along with that sort of stuff. Inevitably, some part of that conversation is you say you're so good at this, and you say, you know, you have 15 or 20 years experience working with software and working with user experience and user interface and how people interact with computers and information, but yet you can't even talk to me in a way that, you know, will help you to understand what I want from the software.
Right.
And so it always ends up being a sort of an ironic outcome.
Yeah.
I focus so much on the aggregate, the majority experience, that I sometimes forget to consider the specific interests and needs of individual people who have stakeholder relationships in this. And so it's, you know, it's a learning experience for me, and I'm not doing a great job at that right now.
Well, the key is understanding that it's a learning experience and being open to the learning.
Yeah, and believe me, I am really very open to learning. I would love to be able to learn in such a way that doesn't involve, like, watching bridges burn. You know, but sometimes I can be sitting on one side of the bridge with a fire hose trying to put out the fire, and if someone is on the other side with a hose coming out of a gas tank, just flooring it,
right,
like spreading that gas as much as possible on that bridge, there's nothing I can do but walk away, and it's sad.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's an incompatibility thing, I guess, in those situations. And this is another thing we talked about with Michelle Royal today, was vetting your customers.
Yeah, and it's a thing that is it's a thing that's difficult to do, especially if you really want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to say, "I'm sorry, I can't help you."
Oh, especially
I have a lot of trouble with that. I have recently had some situations where I was clearly not the right person to help them, and I, instead of just saying, "I'm sorry, this isn't right," I went out of my way to find somebody who could help them and, like, hand them off to that person. Mm. So I could be like, "Here, but this is better. I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm sorry. I wish I could work with you.
I wish I could help you, but this guy is probably better, or this gal is probably better."
That's exactly right.
And I mean, if you're saying what I think you're saying that you take on the responsibility to find a transition person because you feel that you have failed to
meet their
to honor your initial commitment to them,
even though there was no initial commitment.
Right. Even though, I mean, it's in your mind, the commitment was to provide value, and if you don't, then you feel bad about it, and that's natural. I mean, that's human empathy and compassion, which is healthy. It says you're not a sociopath. and you know,
yeah.
It's good.
That is what it is. Yeah.
It's, I don't always go to that extent to help people, mostly because...
Depends on who the person is. I mean, if it's somebody I like, if somebody walks up to me off the street and they're like, can you help me with this? And I'll be like no, not really.
But if it's a relationship
I already had... Yeah.
That's when it gets really troubling.
It gets a little sticky, you know?
Just complex.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I think that is the... both the blessing and the curse of being very well connected in a scene is, as we both are, it provides a lot of great opportunities, no doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. But at the same time, it carries with it a lot more risk and the inevitability that there will be moments of discomfort. It's a great thing if you never do business with friends, but it's also not a great thing because working with your friends is one of the best things you can do. But at the same time, it is also not the best thing you can do because,
I've literally only ever had that go well once.
Yeah.
One time. Yeah. All the times that I worked with friends. Whether it was like, let me train you and help you learn this. And then, when you get like 5% of the way in, you're going to be like, holy shit, I have no idea what I'm doing. I should just pay you more and you build it.
Yeah.
Cool. Great. Yep. And then fail. Because at some point they say, and I say, expectations. And I seem to be rather shitty at expectation mitigation. No, I mean, I'm really good at saying no, but I'm not really good at saying... why?
No. Yeah.
And either that or I'm not very good at explaining why in a way that sounds like it came from a logical decision process and not just an Aubrey is lazy process.
It
is never, I will say this very, very, very strongly, it is never about my ego.
Right.
I don't care. I don't take ownership in, knowing anything about industries I know nothing about. It's ridiculous for me to say.
Sure.
I used to be so arrogant, but now I'm not.
To say that, right.
Because I learned from getting burned when realizing that I actually didn't know what the fuck I was talking about. And so now if I say something, it's because I have an educated opinion about it,
right.
Not because it's better in my eyes for the user than some other option. It's not about me being right. It's never about me being right.
Yeah,
and that's always a point of conflict. That's probably just a matter of personality.
And it's a messaging and couching issue, right? Like how that's delivered makes all the difference.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I certainly have a lot to learn in the respect of doing better at communicating status and direction.
Yeah.
When people are nervous and don't fully trust me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, it's tough.
It is.
Yeah, it's really tough.
And
we have a couple minutes left.
We sort of do.
Yeah. I have a phone call in
minutes. 1.5 minutes?
Yeah, right. that's that. What else is going on here at the First Wave Venture Center? Nerd Lunch. Well,
that's sort of
the time this airs.
Yeah, it'll be after that. So we had a great Nerd Lunch this morning.
Hope you have a good Christmas. And
are you going to be here next week at all, or are you out the whole week?
I will be here on Monday. I will be here on probably Thursday and Friday.
Okay, so you're staying in town. You're not going...
Yeah, no, I'm staying in town.
Okay, so maybe we will have a Christmas episode.
Yeah, probably so. It'll be dead empty in here.
Which is great.
No doubt. Which will be good because I'll have my guitar amp in here.
Oh, yeah.
And
we could do a musical episode.
Indeed.
I'm going to redact that.
Yeah.
No. We could have some fun with it.
Oh, yeah. We'll definitely have some fun with it. Yeah.
And then there's also the Geek Breakfast that you inevitably missed yesterday or tomorrow.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
By the time this airs, it will have been a good Geek Breakfast.
Yeah. We hope. By the way, did you see my poem?
I did. It was really well written. I was kind of jealous a little bit.
Second time in my life I've done that. I did one when I was like 16. I worked at Walgreens and I made a Walgreens version of Twas the Night Before Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. I got inspired.
Yeah, the geek one was really good. I really liked that.
It took a little while. Probably took me about 45 minutes to kind of put that all together.
I'm impressed that you were able to do it in that little amount of time.
Well, I mean, it's one of those like songwriting things where like you spill out a whole bunch of verses and then like you go back and like the way I'll write things and I'm like line, the fourth one should rhyme with that second one, but I have no idea what it should be, so just leave it blank and then line, leave this exactly back to the to-do,
write this, right. Write a rhyme for this word.
And then I go back through and I'm like, okay, think of a word that rhymes with that. Can I make that work into a phrase? No, then change the second line to something else.
Yeah, then you have to refactor that. So it's the same thing as coding.
It's exactly the same thing as coding.
It's just a slightly different skill.
Yeah. Well, even maybe not as much.
Yeah, I mean, so it's an editing process.
Yeah, very much.
Refactoring.
Yeah.
Refactor tractor.
Refactor tractor, baby.
Woot.
Woot, indeed. Well, should we wrap this one up then for this week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Since we can wrap it up like a nice little Christmas present.
Yep.
So,
all righty. Well, enjoy your Christmas there,
and,
folks.
Yeah, and next time we talk to you, we will be, you know, talking about all those gifts that you took back. No, just, I mean, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, well.
Don't take back my gift, though.
Yeah, please, you know, and, yeah, if you have any of those, if you got an extra MacBook Air and you don't want it, you know, you can send those to 400 North Ashley.
Yeah. So we can donate them to Boys and Girls Club.
Right. Exactly.
Ideally.
Yeah. Or yeah.
Or Bank of Justin.
Bank of Justin. That's exactly.
No, that's not acceptable. Come on, man.
Probably not.
You could do better than that.
Yeah, I could at least be the first Bank of Justin. Okay, folks, that's enough of this frivolity for one afternoon.
Indeed.
We'll catch you guys after the holidays. Have a great one. We'll see you then.
Merry Christmas, folks. Thanks for listening.